such a key, and it's a completely hard freeze with the system.
Nice.
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner.
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off, then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust, except for us. Right. You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the Data Doctors.
And welcome to another edition of the Computer Corner.
It's always weird when the intro voice guy got edited and it sounds weird.
Did it sound weird?
I'm probably not supposed to mention that or acknowledge that, but...
You did. You went there.
I think it's... Well, we're not on the air yet, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I got this website for you to check out real quick.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we are on the air. We're the Data Doctors. We're here in the house till 2 o'clock to talk to you about technology, about computers, about the things digital in your lives. And you can join us in so many ways that it actually hurts. We've got Kevin's favorite way, that is smoke signal. He reads that out the one window we have here in studio. And so you can send your smoke signals. You can dial us up at 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR for those who like phonetics or letters or acronyms or abbreviations or...
Numbers and letters.
Letters
mix.
In place of numbers.
The mixture.
The mixture. 277-KTAR. Of course, you can join us online, as always, as you've been able to for, gosh, nearly a decade now, at datadoctors.com. You click on the radio show section and you'll see... information, and if you've joined the show before, which I'm sure many of you have, you'll know that each week we come to the show with sort of a theme in tow. We try to put together resources and things that seem to make sense based on questions we receive. And those questions we get when you're at that radio show page. There's a place for you to ask a question or make a suggestion. We get it through that source and many others. But we get people all the time asking us questions, and when we see two or three or four or 12 or 300 people asking a very similar question, that generally is a pretty good indicator of, hey, that's a topic people might want to talk about. And sometimes there's just things happening in the news. And so whatever the case may be, we put together a theme, a topic. We try to find some resources, and then we talk about those things. And, of course, you're invited to talk about those things with us or whatever your computer ailments are. And, again, we'll run down the various methods kind of as the show progresses. But the most popular, of course, is the phone, 602-277-5827. I mentioned that number early and often because, well, it's probably best for you to call early and often, for the lines will book up generally fairly shortly. So today's theme, today's topic is converting your old media to digital.
You know, I dealt with this all morning today.
Converting your old media?
I had a tape that I really wanted to hear, a band that I hadn't listened to in a while.
Wait, a what?
A band, a music group.
No,
a tape.
A tape.
Remember those?
Like Scotch tape or?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, like a cassette tape.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Gosh.
Music tape. And I was driving around trying to find the CD because that was the easiest and quickest thing for me.
Right. But and you couldn't find Debbie Gibson on CD?
I couldn't find Debbie Gibson. I couldn't find New Kids on the Block. I was
all your old cassettes that you
all
love?
All the best things ever.
Yeah. So your choices are, if you've got your old cassette, obviously if you've got a CD, I think most people have figured out by now that that's pretty easy to get that converted into something digital so you can listen to it on your iPod or your Zune or just store them on your computer because those CDs get lost, bent, broken, stolen, scratched, and otherwise. But what if you have an old LP, a.k.a. record, vinyl? What if you have old cassette tapes or 8-track? What if you have old VHS? That's what I'm trying to think of. VHS, 8mm, reel-to-reel. All this old stuff that I haven't seen a reel-to-reel player in the front of somebody's computer in a long time. I don't think I've seen a cassette deck in more than a decade hooked up to a computer. I'm pretty sure a turntable hooked up to a computer I haven't seen in a while because you don't have turntable drives. You do have CD drives, you have DVD drives, but that's generally the extent of things. And so if you have that type of media and you want to make it digital so you can listen to it portably, well, there's some challenges. And Kevin ran into that challenge as he was talking about this morning. And this show is all about that challenge, how to solve that challenge, overcome that problem, and get you on the road to where you can take all that cool stuff and listen to it. And so you either have to find a way to do that, and that's what today's show is about, or you have to pay a service to do that for you. And so we have resources, links, information, other fun stuff posted for you online that'll help you with that. And we'll talk about those things as the show progresses. Of course, coming up later on in the show, our Geek Speak of the Week, our Head Whack of the Week, and then maybe 7, 8, 9 words or so, maybe more from Kevin.
They're calculated words, by the way.
Calculated?
They're calculated.
How do you calculate your words?
We'll talk about it.
All right, off the air. I need to know because when Kevin speaks, generally it's pretty...
It's impactful. Makes
prophetic.
You feel a little warm. There's a great word. It's prophetic.
I got to have to use a new big word each and every week. And it started, I think, maybe a year and a half ago with the word ubiquitous. And it just slipped into the conversation. And then Ken, he was like 3 words past it and then stopped and said, "What did you just say?" And so it's become this thing that I sort of do, sort of by accident, but it happens almost every week. And I'm going to get a phone call in the break from someone that, you know who you are, Jody. She's listening. She's going to call me. She's going to say, "Hey, you used that word." Had I not mentioned it, she would have done it anyway. And it just is, it's just a normal thing. Mm-hmm. But we've got lines open for you and a place for you so you can make a call to us, to Kevin, and hear his prophetic wisdom in your own ear, in your cochlea. The number is 602-277-5827. You're looking at me like, what?
I don't know what that word means.
When Dr. Art comes in, we're going to ask him what a cochlea is, and he'll tell you. 277-KTAR. Again, we have resources posted for you online, datadoctors.com/radio, or click on the radio show section. There's a couple of things that sort of relate to the topic, to today's theme, that are in the news. We've got a resource posted for you at the website that takes you to a article in the Washington Post about how the RIAA, that's the sort of governing body for the Recording Industry Association of America, they now have come out and sort of said or claimed that, well, stealing music is more than just taking and making copies and giving them to others or making them available for download or sharing them. It's also making copies, period. And before, people had kind of assumed, and the general overall thought, and even what was kind of said, is, well, it's okay for you to take something you've purchased yourself, a CD you purchased yourself, and make a copy for yourself as like a backup, or to take that and be able to use it on a portable device. The important thing is that you've paid for the music, and as long as you're making a copy for your own personal use, that's no problem. It's as soon as you start sharing that outward that there's a problem. Well, the IRA says no. Making a copy for yourself, they say, is illegal.
Hmm.
They say making a copy or taking that CD and putting it in your CD drive in your computer and using the process that we call ripping, making that into MP3 files or whatever the case may be, and then listening to that, well, that's theft.
So what our whole topic of our show today is technically theft.
Well, but it is it or isn't it? That's
according
their claim.
According to the RAA, it is.
Right. That's their claim. Now, whether their claim is true or not is for you to decide. But that means, if you think about that, well, anybody who does that process or creates tools enable you to do that. So Microsoft is in violation of the law because they create a tool that lets you put your CD in and rips it. And so is Apple, by the way, because, you know, if you have their iTunes software, does that for you, right?
Hmm.
By the way, DVRs, who has one of those these days, huh? Isn't that taking and making a copy of a copyrighted thing? It's only for your own personal use, but hey, I mean, how far do we take this?
It's a little out of control.
That's what I think, too. So we can talk about that. There's still one line open, 602-277-5827, and you can talk about those things, whatever it is with your digital music, digital media, or your just technical consternation. We're here for you. We're the Data Doctors. We're here till 2 o'clock. And we're going to take a quick time out here, get ourselves a little caffeinated. I got to find out from Kevin what his calculations really are.
My prophecy?
Your prophecy, your calculations. We're going to talk about that. But more importantly, we're going to get prophecy from the prophet of the roadways himself. It's Mr. Steve Ludwig in the KTR Traffic Center. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Sony BMG, a record label. They plan to drop DRM, in case you're wondering what DRM is, Kevin.
Digital Rights Management.
Correct. Digital Rights Management, it's, well, in essence, it's it's a real basic form of copy protection for digital media files, and something that Sony kind of got themselves in trouble with a while back, and so now they're kind of reversing things and dropping it. It's interesting. The recording industry in general, and it's had to undergo a lot of change because of digital media. And at first, it was just rampant theft, true theft. I mean, with the early days of Napster and some of the other file sharing utilities, networks, and things that were out there, no two ways about it. It was a bad problem. I think it's much less of a bad problem today. And I think that the recording industry had to go through some education process to learn how to deal with the issues, the problems, and they're having to recreate themselves and create different ways to protect their revenue streams. So anyway, that was one of the news items in this week's newsletter, if you're interested in subscribing. It's commercial-free, ad-free, spam-free, garbage-free, and we don't sell or rent your name, list, information, or email address to anyone. You can subscribe anytime at datadoctors.com. You look for the box to put in an email address, and there's a button that says subscribe, and when you click on that, well, it's fairly self-explanatory, right, Kevin?
Fairly.
Fairly?
Yeah, I think that's pretty easy.
You think it's easy?
I think so.
Let's, you think, maybe jumping into some phone calls, and then we'll kind of mix in the theme as we talk about stuff and some junk?
Fair enough.
Fair enough. All right. Up first on the computer corner today, it is Bruce. And Bruce, it just says
yes.
NM. Is that New Mexico, Bruce?
Lordsburg, New Mexico.
All right. I don't know. Is that like an Albuquerque kind of suburb, or where's that at?
It's right on 10, just inside New Mexico, 22 miles inside the state.
Well, some people would say people who live out in Apache Junction here in the valley live in New Mexico, so this is a little further New Mexico, though.
A little bit.
Well, hey, Bruce, we're glad you called. We're glad you're listening out there. What can we do to help you out today?
Hey, I got a Dell Inspiron laptop, and the USB port, I've got my external hard drive and my printer plugged in there, and it keeps shorting out, so it loses the connection and it comes on. And I don't even have to move anything. It'll just sit there and go back and forth from, you know, losing it, finding it. And I was wondering if what it takes to replace that connection, and two, if I can upgrade it to USB 2 high speed.
Well, let's back up a little bit. You said it's an external hard drive that keeps kind of losing connection?
Yeah, it's the external hard drive is plugged into the USB port on the back.
Okay, and so your assumption is that there's something wrong with the USB port. Let me ask a few questions. The external hard drive, does it have its own power source, or does it?
It does. It does it for my printer also, so I know it's not the hard drive. It's the connection.
Okay, so I the reason I ask that is sometimes there'll be devices, specifically hard drives, that they can try to draw their power from the USB port, but we see that sometimes that'll cause them to do exactly what you're experiencing. So if that was the case, then we would be talking a lot about different things. But you're also saying that the USB ports, you have older USB ports that are not the USB 2.0 high-speed ports?
Correct.
And so this machine, is it running Windows XP, Windows 98? What operating system?
XP.
Okay. Well, it is possible. There's really no way to change out those ports per se. They're generally built in. They're built onto the motherboard, and there's no way to take them out and put in new. But that doesn't mean that you can't put an add-on card in that adds additional USB ports. And when you get that add-on card, it'll be what they call a PCI card. So you'd open up your computer with the power shut off and everything. You'd stick this card in, and it would go into an empty slot. And you might have to pull off like a little slot cover or things like that. But when it's all done, you turn the computer on, and in the back, you'd add several new USB ports that would be on this card. Generally, anywhere between 2 and 4 new ports would be added. And Windows would go through, detect the thing, install device drivers, that kind of stuff. But when it's all said and done, you would have added these ports to the back of the machine, and then you can plug in and go from there. Now, if you want, you may be able to go into the BIOS of that machine and disable the ports that were built onto the front, but you really can't remove them per se from a physical standpoint.
Okay.
But there probably wouldn't be any real advantage to disabling them unless you were having some problem where there weren't enough what we call IRQs, which is a technical term, basically meaning there's like playing musical chairs, there's not enough free seats for the new guy to sit down. So if that were the problem, only if you had a problem installing this new USB add-on card would you need to possibly go in and mess with the BIOS and disable those onboard ones. But I think probably just buying that new add-on card, sticking it in there, and going forth, you should be in good shape.
Okay, so that would also not only replace, you know, by adding more ports, it'd also give me the high-speed USB 2.
Yeah, just make sure when you're buying that add-on card that is a USB 2.0 add-on card, and you should be good to go. Hey, thanks for the call, Bruce. We appreciate it. There's a line open for you at 602-277-5827. Also, join us online. Get a little preview of the things we're going to be talking about in the show, more of the resources. It's datadoctors.com/radio. We're here for the next hour and a half, so stick around. It's the Computer Corner. Data Doctors are in the house. We'll be back right after the news. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Brandon.
Where do I get that newsletter?
www.datadoctors.com under the Free Help Center.
You're right.
I know.
You know why you care about that free newsletter. Well, each week we give you a preview of the radio show. We give you a preview of our Geek Speak of the Week, Head Whack of the Week. But more important than that, we include information about the latest security threats, news in the news, stuff in the news, information in the news, things pertaining to technology in the news, and more news. Did we mention there's some news there? Also, a couple-day head start on the weekly advice column. It's published in the East Valley Tribune. And so rather than wait for it to actually be published in print on Mondays, you can see it generally a few days ahead of time on Fridays or Saturdays. And all of that, might I remind you, with no commercials, no ads, no gimmicks, no spam, no garbage. And we own the list, so we don't have to worry about somebody else taking it and sending you garbagey garbage stuff. Doesn't that sound good to you?
Yeah.
It sounds good to about 45,000 other people as well, because that's how many people are currently subscribed and get our fine newsletter each and every week. Not to mention all the people who can see it on demand in case your ISP blocks it or you just prefer to go look at it at your leisure. You can do that in the Free Help Center. As Kevin mentioned, there's a place that says newsletter archives, and the last dozen or so newsletters are there for you to see, print, do whatever you'd like with to your heart's content. Right?
Sounds great.
Should we get back to the old radio show thing that we're doing here?
You know, I do got to say something. I actually ask you a question. I'm looking at that article where the RIAA actually sued a guy because he had copied his CDs onto his computer.
Right.
Wasn't sharing them or anything illegal like that. Sued him because it was his copy of his music.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any legal precedent or is there any law saying you can or cannot do that?
You asking me?
I figured you'd be the best person to ask.
I'll make up an answer. I could be 50% right or wrong. Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
Great. Hey, you know, we were talking about, so you had this cassette tape. What was the cassette tape, by the way?
It was a tape I bought back in 96. It was a band called Tool.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I didn't have a CD player in my car. I was, you know, fresh out of high school or whatever. And I wanted to listen to it again. I hadn't listened to it some time. I've listened to other CDs by them, just not that particular one.
And you didn't want to go pay 99 cents a song to go download it?
I didn't want to do that. Well, I wanted the actual CD because it's, you know, I wanted to support the band in that way. And I
right.
wanted to actually hold it because I had the cassette before. And I drove out to Goodyear to find it.
Couldn't. Oh, you found it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought that somewhere in this whole story was going to be I couldn't find it, so I ended up having to convert it from cassette to
that,
something
that
digital.
That story didn't have a happy ending.
And
sorry.
Then the question was going to be, well, then how did you do so? Because that's the question a lot of people have is, well, how do I take that cassette and how do I get it converted to MP3 or substitute cassette with LP or whatever your media is? And we've got some resources posted for you online, datadoctors.com. Click on the radio show section. But the most basic form of how you're going to get this done is every computer these days comes with a sound card. That sound card on the back of your computer will have some inputs and outputs. And different computers, different models have different things, but the basics are that you'll have generally a speaker out or several of them, if you have like surround sound, things like that. You'll also have a line in, perhaps a mic, and perhaps some headphones. But the one we're concerned with today is going to be the line in jack. And on most computers, it would be color-coded blue, I believe. That's from memory, so if I'm wrong, somebody feel free to correct me. You're just looking at me like, who would correct you?
Well, they have a little funny, remember the little pictures above the holes? They say, like, input?
A lot of people can't see those pictures because they're kind of etched in steel and they're tiny, and then they don't really mean a whole lot in and of themselves.
Yeah.
So they tried to use these colors, too. And I believe, like I said, blue is the color for line in. Anyway, you're going to locate this line in jack on the back of your computer. And you would take your old cassette deck or your old turntable or your old whatever the case may be. And take the line out of it, plug it into the line in on your computer. And you'll need some recording software and a couple other little pieces of small, inexpensive technology, and then some patience and some time. And there's some step-by-step instructions, but that's the basics of what you're going to need to be able to play from your old media and record at the same time on your new media, your digital media, your computer. And then from there, you're off to the races with loading that onto your iPod or whatever it is you're going to do with it from that point. Obviously, whatever you're going to do with it, not including sharing that file, which would, of course, be illegal, we know. Even making recording may be illegal at this point. We don't know.
Yeah, it's a 50-50 shot.
I can't even imagine that that's some reality that's going to persist out there. But, you know, that it's the RIAA is trying their best to make it so that every time you want to listen to everything, it's pay per listen. It's pay per second of listening time.
Well, when their job is graded upon how much money they're reversing the tide as far as, you know, people stealing or whatnot, and it keeps going down, they've got to go every which way, I imagine. There's a lot that they've said that makes sense. You don't want to share stuff illegally. You don't want to take it. That makes total sense. But to protect the sensitive CD, or even just get rid of, you know, if you can't find a record player anymore, you got to copy those things to something that's a little bit more permanent.
Yeah.
And to say that's illegal, it just doesn't make any sense.
It's going a little nutsy.
Yeah.
A little nutsy indeed. Let's see if we can get back to the phones, help some more people out. We'll be talking more about how to convert and the topic of just dealing with your old media and having to put it in the digital realm as the show progresses. And as a reminder, we're here until 2 o'clock, so lots of time for you to call 602-277-5827, just like Lisa did in Scottsdale. Lisa, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a Toshiba laptop, and all of a sudden yesterday, it was working. My son was playing a video game, then he quit and did something else and then came back to it and turned it on, and the screen isn't working anymore. It's black. I can see, like, in the background, I can see things going on that, you know, the computer's working, but the screen's black.
So you can kind of faintly see something in the background, like images and things happening, but you just can't see them clear enough?
You know, I turned it off, and then I can see the login screen where it wants the password. I can see that white square.
Okay.
And I can type in the password, and I can see this, you know, the computer booting up.
Okay, have you taken and shut this thing off, taken the battery out, made sure it's completely off, and then
taking the battery out.
Okay, you might want to just try, just because it can't hurt. The best way with a laptop to make sure that it's off all the way off is unplug it and take the battery out. That way your shirt's off, then stick the battery back in, plug it back in, turn the thing back on, and see if things don't change for you. Now, I'm going to take a guess that that's probably not going to do a lot for you, but it's worth a shot. If that doesn't solve your problem, there's a pretty high likelihood that the something known as the backlight on that laptop has gone out.
That's what it seems like. Something, you know, like a light's off.
Yeah, and that's probably as much as I'm sure you'd love to have a reason why this happened. Probably not the fault of your son. It's probably just a coincidence that while he was doing whatever he was doing, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
How old is this laptop?
2 years, maybe.
Okay, and
I think a year ago, October. Anyway,
it's important because most manufacturers, if it's within a year, that's part of their standard warranty. And so, if it's within that year, you're in great shape. You're going to have some
downtime.
Well, no,
I know. Okay, anyway.
If it's beyond that and you didn't purchase any kind of extended warranty, anything like that, then you're looking at having some expense to, A, diagnose that that's exactly what the problem is or it's something else, and then, B, fix that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the laptop was kind of one of the bottom-of-the-line, real inexpensive ones, it's probably worth the money to get it repaired. If it was the least expensive thing you could buy back 2 years ago or a year ago, however old that thing is, and if it's more than probably two and a half, maybe 3 years old, unless it was really high end, it's going to start to make less and less sense as that thing gets older. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. I think we paid like almost, not quite $900.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a year ago, October.
Okay.
So it's over. It's over a year.
So you might want to just get on the phone with Toshiba. And okay. You said it was a Toshiba laptop, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so get on the phone with them, and you might have to sit on hold a little bit and do the little dance across the globe to talk to some folks. But there's a small chance that they may still have some kind of warranty coverage for something like that. That would be nice. Obviously, the next step is you need to get it diagnosed, and so you need to take it to someplace who can do that for you. And okay. Then after that, then you have to make some decisions based on what they tell you. Now, keep in mind, you know, that a new laptop, generally, for a decent middle-of-the-road laptop, you're going to spend between $800 and $1,200, depending on the bells and whistles and things that you're going to want. So you can certainly find them for less than that, but they're pretty low-end, pretty well corners cut, closeouts, things like that. And you can easily spend a lot more than that, but you're going to be paying for kind of higher-end technology. So as your repair bill starts to approach that number, right, that starts to make you consider whether or not it's worth it.
Okay. Do you have any idea, like, what it cost to repair a backlight?
If that's what the problem is, the charges for that kind of thing can vary pretty widely. I would say definitely it's going to be in the hundreds of dollars and not less, mm-hmm. but not into the thousands of dollars, no.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hey, good luck with your issue there, Lisa. And if we turned out to be wrong, you give us a call back and let us know. Either way, just let us know.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You had that answer, right?
Oh, yeah.
You knew that.
That's a tough problem. Every laptop is proprietary, meaning that a lot of those parts will only fit in that specific model, make, everything. So when you have something like that go bad, it's not like a regular desktop where you can just go to the store, pick it off the shelf. You've got to find a very specific part, and ultimately they charge you for that.
Right, and that's why the range, I mean, she asked, what's it cost? Well, the part itself, it may be something that Toshiba and lots of other manufacturers used in lots of laptops, in which case it's a fairly common part. Therefore, because of the supply and demand ratio, not too bad. The labor is going to be the labor pretty much. I mean, some laptops are a little harder to deal with from a labor standpoint, but the parts are where things can really get interesting, and sometimes you can find things, depending on the laptop, the model, those kinds of things, fairly inexpensive, and sometimes they get way out of control because there's very limited supply, and or there's only one supplier, being the manufacturer, and that's where things can get real expensive real quick. So it's generally, you know, she said the thing was just over a year old. In almost every case, it's going to make sense to spend the money to repair something like that, because that laptop by no means is going to be anywhere near obsolete at this point, so that's my feeling anyway, my 2 cents. And your 2 cents will be, you know, basically the same, I'm guessing, yeah?
Yeah, most of what I think comes from you anyway, so.
Most of everything you think? Do I have mind control over you?
For computers, yes.
Computer mind control?
Yes.
Are you like my robot?
I don't know if I like that. It makes me feel uncomfortable.
I kind of like that.
I bet you do.
Speaking of mind control, do you want to you know where I'm going with this?
Tell me about the mind control.
The man who has mind control over the roadways is none other than Steve Ludwig. We got to check in with him for traffic and weather, because there's things happening out there that you need to be aware of, and Steve's going to control it for you. Steve, take it away. We're talking about converting all your old media to digital. You can join us online, datadoctors.com. You click on the radio show section and you'll see those media conversion links and resources. By the way, you can click down below where it says previous shows. And I was looking the other day. We've got shows going back into the mid-90s, my friend.
Wow.
We got almost a decade, or more than a decade's worth of stuff there, I think, for you. You could spend half a lifetime. Well, close to half a lifetime. And starting about 2 years ago, or maybe a year and a half ago, we started for the audio archives that we post up, which is basically what you're listening to now, just on demand, which probably is illegal, right?
Well, I guess.
Wait, but it's copyright KTAR and us, because we're the speakers of the voice and the. So I think it's not illegal. So it's cool. We're one of the few places that isn't.
Yeah, but if one of your listeners gave it to one of their friends.
Now, what if they just listened, though?
I don't know. All you can really do with music.
Either way, we've got those audio archives. They're there. They're available for you, and we've they're commercial free, which is cool. right?
Right.
They're on demand. You can pause them. You can fast forward. You can rewind. You can listen to Kevin's voice over and over and over and over again if you wanted to. Are you thinking about that for a minute going, wow?
I'm letting that sink in.
All right. Let's get back to the phone so we can help more people out. And we've got up next Alice, who's been very patient. And Alice, we appreciate that. Welcome to the Computer Corner.
Thank you. I have a question about Word or Microsoft's Word 2007. I find it very unfriendly, user-friendly.
Okay. Did you find previous versions of Word user-friendly?
Yes. I'm familiar with it, but it's just on a trial on a new laptop I got, and I was going to purchase it thinking I have to just work through it. But I just wanted your opinion. Are you familiar with it, real familiar with the 2007 or version or not?
Absolutely. It's Microsoft's newest version of Word, and it's part of the Office suite that's been around for a long, long time. Right. They decided to change the overall look and feel of things, and some people are comfortable with it, and some people are not. Now, I can tell you, if you're one of the people, like many, who are really not comfortable with the new look and feel and the way things work, it's still the same kind of old Word under the hood. But they've just made the interface look and feel different. But the good news is that there's a way to take it and make it look and feel much, much, much like older versions of Word.
Well, then tell me how.
And that's why I asked the question, because if you're cool with the old versions, then we can kind of go back in time. The steps, they're a little bit lengthy, and there are a couple places you have to go, but if you have an internet connection and have something to jot down with and on and to and from,
yep.
Then you're going to, you know how to use Google?
Yes.
Okay, so you're going to go to Google's website.
Okay.
And you type in the words making Word 2007, and probably just those couple. Let me see real quick here. Making Word. Actually, if I just type in just making Word 2007, and it doesn't sound like it's going to do much for you. But when you do that, the first search result that's going to come back will bring you to how to make Word 2007 to save. No, default. Well, the first thing it's going to bring you is how to make it save in the old format. So if you had people that were stuck using the old format, then that'll give you step-by-step instructions on how to do that. If you scroll down a little ways, probably fourth or fifth or sixth one down, it'll give you that there's a link there, and if you look through some of the instructions, it'll teach you how to set the interface to look and feel like the old interface. So right now what you're seeing is what they call a ribbon interface at the top there, and it's got these kind of strange buttons.
Right.
And there's a way to turn that off and make it look like the old-fashioned kind of drop-down, you know, file, edit, view, that kind of thing, plus the little buttons for the common things that you use, like the toolbars.
Okay.
So there's instructions there, step-by-step, on how to go into the options and make things look more like the classic Word view, like 2003 or 2000, whatever version you were used to.
Okay.
So you can absolutely kind of do that. And it's good that you're still on a trial. I would try those things, make sure you're comfortable with it before you decide to make the purchase. And if at the end of the day it's still just not quite working for you, then there are a number of places out there where you can still buy the old version of Word. That's 2003. And you'd be good to go with that. Now, the only downside to buying that old version of Word is that at some point you may need to upgrade to what the rest of the world runs, and this may be a couple years down the road. So if you can figure out how to make the 2007 work the way you like, you're going to be better off for the long run.
Well, I thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck with that, Alice. Thanks for the call, and thanks for being so patient and waiting for us.
You bet.
All right. That gives us a free line at 602-277-5827. Kevin's smiling and smirking. You're thinking about buying that, aren't you? You know, when we come back, we're both thinking about taking the plunge on something. It's a video game console system, and there are several of them out there, so we'll leave a little bit of suspense as to which. But we're both thinking about the same one and for the same reasons. And I've been talking to a couple other people lately that are thinking about the same kind of thing, and it's kind of a strange timing that there's so many people I know thinking about this. Maybe it's something you're thinking about, too. We'll tell you about what that that thing is we're thinking, and you'll know what we're thinking. You'll be thinking the same, maybe. When we come back, it's the Computer Corner. Data Doctor's in the house, back right after the short news break.
You touch a key, and it just completely hard freezes the system.
Nice!
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner.
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off, then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust.
Except for us.
Right. You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the computer corner, here are the data doctors.
And welcome back to the computer corner, hour number two. Which means we have roughly an hour left to talk to you about technology, consternation, problems, computer-related technology, gadgets, gizmos, and whatnots. And maybe have a little fun at the same time. In case you missed any part of the show, fear not. We've got audio archives that are being recorded as we speak, and they get posted up as quickly after the show as we can, generally probably sometime Monday morning, because after I'm done here, I try to take whatever semblance of a weekend is left and go enjoy it with my family. So it's usually Mondays or so before we get that kind of all put together and pieced together and shot up there. And those of you who are anxious to get it, the best, quickest, fastest, most goodest way for you to get it is subscribe to our podcast. In fact, it fits nicely with this week's theme. If you are unfamiliar with what a podcast is, well, when you're at our site at the radio show section, and the site is datadoctors.com, you can see on the right there links, and one of them is to subscribe to the podcast, and then there's a link right below describing what a podcast is, and we've even got a link to a free piece of software that helps you get started if you don't already have something. And if you're on iTunes, and specifically iTunes.com, and you want to search the podcast area, just search for Data Doctors, and you'll find our podcast there. You can subscribe that way as well. It's at iTunes for you, and each week a new one's added, and if you just subscribe, they just start coming to you. It's cool. All the cool kids are doing it, even Kevin.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
We've been talking about converting your old media, whether it's cassettes or 8-tracks or vinyl, whatever that stuff is, to MP3 or to digital, the digital domain in general. And we've got resources posted for you online, datadoctors.com. You click on the radio show section and you'll see those resources. We're going to talk a little bit about some of those things in just a second, but I thought it would be important. We have somebody on the line. His name is Peter, who called up and had some more information for us about what the RIAA is trying to do in saying that it's illegal, and it's their claim that it's illegal for you to take and make copies of your music, whether those are CDs or DVDs or whatever the stuff is. It's illegal for you to make a copy even for your own personal use. Before, we all understood, or lots of us understood at least, that it was illegal for me to make a copy and give it to Kevin. But we thought it was okay for Kevin to make a copy for Kevin's safekeeping and personal use as a more convenient method. And the RIAA is saying, no, that's not the case. But Peter has some information that might help clear some of this up, or at least, well, add to the confusion, perhaps. Peter, are you there?
Yes, Brandon. First of all, I think it's real important for me to say I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not offering legal advice here. But I have done some research on copyright, and I did read an article in the New York Times that was saying a lot of these organizations are using the media to intimidate the public as far as copying CDs or whatever for their own use. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they may not be able to win in court, but they put it out on the airwaves so that people are real careful in what they do. In fact, there was a recent article about a local taxi driver who's being sued $40,000 for copying his own CDs onto his computer. And, of course, it's getting a lot of media coverage, and everybody gets real scared about that. So that's one of the comments that this New York Times article was making.
So the idea here is that guys like Kevin and I, we get scared because we hear in the news that this is happening and people are getting sued, and so we start to maybe second guess and say, well, maybe I shouldn't be taking my whole CD collection. By the way, I have a garage full of old CDs that, you know, I keep meaning to get around to spending the time to go through and rip and save, because I know that someday those things are going to be sitting out in the garage, especially in Arizona. They're not going to last forever. Maybe I'm starting to think, well, maybe, gosh, it's already a little bit of a hassle to do that. Plus, now I'm scared that I might get in trouble. Maybe I'll just go buy all that music from the download sites, which plays right into their hand. Is that kind of
take? Well, that's a possibility, too, but it really goes to copyright law. And again, I'm reiterating, I'm not a lawyer, but I have researched it. And one of the things in copyright law is a thing called fair use, which allows you to use certain things under certain circumstances for educational purposes and personal use and that sort of thing. Now, whether or not copying CDs to your own computer for your own use falls under that might make a court case, but whether or not they would win is questionable. And again, somebody can sue you for anything, but whether or not they'll win in court is a different situation. It's also kind of like being right in a car accident where you were correct, but you got killed. And
right.
In that sense, they can haul you into court, and you have to pay all your court costs and lawyers and all that. And you may win your case, but it costs you a whole lot of money. So that's part of the intimidation process also.
Right. Well, hey, Peter, we appreciate the call and the information. And even with the disclaimer that you're not an attorney, I think it's still valuable stuff.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You bet.
Bye-bye. That was just some guy listening that decided, hey, you know what, I got a couple of 2 cents that I could throw in on this.
Well, yeah, I was getting pretty nervous.
It's unusual for us to get calls, though, from people that are actually just given information and want to talk. They generally want to talk about their, I have this problem with XYZ, and which is cool. Just that was even more cool for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Didn't you think so?
I agree.
Yeah.
Great. I'm trying to figure this out, this problem I've got out with this 360.
Oh, so yeah, before we went to the break, we talked about the gaming consoles, and for whatever reason, Kevin and I have found our paths crossing, which doesn't happen all that often, but we're both sort of toying with the idea of this game console, the Xbox 360, and for those of you who are into consoles, you all know, or for those of you that aren't, there are three big kind of console games out there right now. You either go out and you buy a Nintendo Wii, which is probably the least expensive of the three, but also the most difficult to find, it seems. You buy a Sony PlayStation 3, which is just the latest addition in their PlayStation empire, or you buy from Microsoft a Xbox 360. And they're kind of targeted a little bit at different general areas, but for whatever reason, we're both kind of sort of thinking about this Xbox 360 thing, and now, of course, becomes then the big, well, I got to do some research, I got to do some comparisons between this version, because there's like five different versions of this and they come with these different accessories, and do I really care about those things? And so it's an interesting thing that it kind of shows that I'm sure you're going to be like me, where you're going to use the internet to research the heck out of this thing. You're going to make whatever your buying decisions are based on what you find, and then you're going to go into some bricks and mortar store and actually make the purchase. And it's interesting, I remember maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago when online shopping was first kind of starting, and people saying people will never buy on the internet, and that may or may not be true. I've purchased many things on the internet. I'm sure you have too. But it is interesting how the internet has become this thing that we use as a research tool, that we make a buying decision, and we may not necessarily make the purchase on the internet, even though we could, even though you might be at the website for Costco and you see the deal that you want. You also know you could walk into the warehouse and have it right now and not have to wait for shipping and all that. And so it becomes this really kind of cool thing where it becomes the thing that is your what makes your purchase decision, but not necessarily where you make the purchase.
Well, for me, it had to do with the music that I was listening to. I got a Zune. I got the software that lets me listen to whatever in the world I want to as much as I want for like $15. But I don't want to load it on my laptop and move my laptop downstairs to connect it to my home theater system.
Right.
I'd rather have something that was always there so I didn't have to worry about it. And from what I understand, the Xbox 360 can act as a media center.
Yes.
So it can pull the music off of one of the PCs where I have my Zune music saved, and they can play it through my home theater system.
Yeah, they actually call it, I think, a media extender in that case. But it's the idea of taking the console, the game console, and making it more than just a game console. It can be a mini little web browser that you can use your TV as the monitor for. It can be the thing you can look at pictures and watch, watch videos and listen to MP3s on. It can be all those things in addition to just the gaming device. And that's trying to make it more part of your life and therefore more valuable to you, so that maybe the price tag of the thing doesn't seem so bad. So it's just kind of was an interesting thing. It sort of related to the topic, and I thought, let's talk about that a little bit. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about specifically, how do I get stuff from my old vinyl, my old LPs, onto my computer in digital format, because that's something that I know a lot of people are interested in. We've had a couple people already calling about that. And so that's coming up. And, of course, our Geek Speak of the Week and Headwhack of the Week shortly thereafter. What was I going to say? I lost my whole train of thought. Don't you hate when that happens? I know what I was going to say. My train of thought is going to turn into an automobile of thought. And then Steve Ludwig is going to help direct traffic. Or he's going to at least tell us where the traffic is. in the KTR Traffic Center. Steve. So in the history of least smooth transitions ever.
You won.
I think I just won.
You won. I would not transfer your voice to CD on that one.
Well, you know what? It's going to live forever in the digital realm in the audio archives, which you'll be able to find early next week at our website, datadoctors.com/radio, so you can hear me do that poor transition again and again and again.
So at the beginning of the show, we said that there was a topic.
Yeah, we did.
And the topic was, so far, the RIAA and whether or not it's okay to copy your own music.
Well, the topic really deals with digital media and mostly how to get it from some source to the digital realm. But that kind of ties into it and other things. But where were you going with that?
Eventually, we're going to have to explain to people how do they take their old stuff and put it on their computer to edit.
Well, so we've got resources posted for you. Not just for you, but for the listeners, right? At our website. It's datadoctors.com/radio in case you missed that. And you look under this week's links, and you'll see things like, what do I need to convert LPs to CD? That's a big, big question a lot of people have. How to convert cassette tapes to CD? Or what about pay services? I want to have somebody just do it for me. What about there's these new turntables, fairly new, recently new, that you can buy that are a special kind of turntable that have they just plug right into the USB port on your computer. So they're made specifically for doing exactly what it is that you might be trying to do. And I highly suggest if you're trying to get stuff off of vinyl onto your own computer, you want to do it yourself, I believe for less than $100, and I'm thinking somewhere in the $60 or $70 price range, you can buy these USB turntables. They're just a simple record player, right? And they have a USB plug in the back, and they plug right into your PC. They come with simple software, and in a few short steps, you're on your way to taking all your old vinyl and getting it into the digital realm in a pretty efficient way that actually produces a pretty good sound. So,
well, that's makes a lot more sense than buying some type of connector and then changing that old connection to that headphone jack-looking thing on the back of the PC.
Absolutely. There's also links and resources to get tapes from your old camcorders to DVDs, a piece of software called Audacity that's a real good general use piece of software to be able to do everything kind of in the realm of audio files specifically and computers, and it's for free, and it's linked and listed there. Also, what general costs you can expect for transferring from one form of media to another. And so we've got a link to a resource that has a way you can just kind of put in, well, I have 80 millimeter this and reel-to-reel that, and what's this going to cost for me to get it done? And you can either pay that service, or I think they're more like a broker where they'll tell you, well, here's the places you can go and here's the general prices you're going to expect to spend. So lots of links, lots of resources, lots of good stuff there for you to check out. Again, it's online at datadoctors.com. You click on the radio show section, and you'll see those things. We could go into step-by-step details, but it gets a little monotonous, and really, unless you're going to write those down, it's not going to do a whole lot of good, so you might as well go and check out those links and see for yourself the step-by-step, how do I do this? It's not that scary, but if you have a lot of stuff, it may make sense for you to find one of those services and utilize them. By the way, at the radio show page, you'll see a section in the feedback area that links to our blog, and a few people have already posted in there some information and just some additional kind of thoughts. And one guy posted a link to a place that I guess is here locally that he's had some experience with that does media conversions that he had great experience with. So that might be another suggestion for you if you're looking to find a service. Somebody else has kind of found that and already done a little homework for you. So you could check out their thoughts and recommendations in the blogs section there. Should we get back to the phones?
Sure.
We've got time, I think, for at least another caller or two before we jump to the news here. And let's talk to Tom in Peoria. Tom, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Yeah. You know, I just purchased a wireless and USB network adapter. I'm trying to go Wi-Fi here at my home, a Linksys. And I installation directions with the software, and it seemed to have installed properly. However, it's sure my wireless internet. Wrong. What preference am I to the...
There's a couple of... I picked them, and then now I'm pushing up just some one-on-one help right here. And when we come back, We'll be answering Tom's question of why isn't it connecting, what can he do, the steps he can take to troubleshoot that and get that problem resolved. So stick around. And for the rest of you there on hold, Dave, Ryan, Tom, Dell, Anthony, stick around. It's the Computer Corner back right after this short break. Back to the Computer Corner. We've still got half an hour left, so we are glad you're sticking around, and we encourage you to continue to stick around. By the way, quick programming note, just after the Computer Corner, you'll find the one and only Dr. Art Mullen, a legend in the media in general. He's here on KTAR each and every week just after us, and we're fortunate enough to share the same studio with him. And then, of course, he also does his whole TV3 thing each Sunday morning, so stay tuned for Dr. Art right after our show. Let's not jump back in the phones. We've got something we're compelled to do because it is, well, the second half of the second hour, which means that it's time for Pete to play a sound file. That signals the time for our Geek Speak of the Week. Each and every week we bring you a topic, but more importantly, we bring you a word, a phrase, or a piece of information from the vernacular of geekdom. That's the world of the geeks, jerks, and nerds that try to talk down to you. We try to decode their geekanese to help you better understand what it is they're saying so that you don't feel like they're talking down to you. And more importantly, you can talk back to them intelligently about what they're talking about.
We'll do our best.
Well, we'll try.
Yeah. So this week, the word is aliasing.
Aliasing?
Did I kill that?
No, aliasing. It has nothing to do with that old TV show that was called Alias.
Okay.
And it has nothing to do with, like, an AKA name. Aliasing. What's aliasing, Kevin?
It's the appearance of jagged distortions and curves and diagonal lines, which is usually in computer graphics because of the resolution, whether it's diminished or limited.
So the way you can see this really, really quickly is if you took a picture you got off the internet, and maybe something small, like a thumbnail image, a thumbnail being a small representation of a bigger image. You got that thumbnail, and then you tried to blow it up to the size of a large image. Really quickly, what you're going to find is that the image looks really poor, and it looks kind of blurry and kind of weird. But if you look specifically at the edges of the image, meaning if there was a, let's just say it was a real simple black background with a white circle, that white circle that used to look round suddenly doesn't appear so round. It kind of stair steps. It goes horizontal, then vertical, and so on. And that stair steppy, jaggedy edge kind of thing is aliasing.
Hmm.
And so then there's a term in graphics programs called anti-aliasing, which tries to smooth and remove that kind of stuff by putting a lot more jaggies inside of it to make it appear back to a round kind of thing.
Hmm.
Right?
Gotcha.
Aliasing. Why they call it aliasing, I don't really know.
What if? Here's a good question for you. Let's say I have a digital camera that's 6 megapixel I just got for Christmas, and I take this uncompressed photo, and it turns out that it could probably print out across a huge poster.
Okay.
And I want to print it on a 4x6, mm-hmm. and I try to crop it all the way down, not necessarily crop it,
squish it,
shrink it down. Will I see some of that stuff if that happens?
Generally not. You can generally take something. It's the source is what's important. If the source is large and you want to make it smaller, squishing stuff, generally you can do without real degradation, as long as you're keeping the aspect ratio, which is the ratio of its width to height, the same. As soon as you start to change that, the image starts to get real distorted and look real funky. Like one of those mirrors at the carnival, right?
Mm.
So as long as you keep that aspect ratio intact, shrinking something generally doesn't have the same problem. Pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
So that's aliasing. Let's get back to the phones. I think we were talking with Tom in Peoria, who had a Wi-Fi problem, and his issue, just to kind of quickly review, you went out and bought yourself a new wireless N network adapter.
USB network adapter.
Yep, and you also have a wireless N router. You've
yes.
plugged these devices in, turned them on, flipped the switches, installed the drivers, jumped yes. through the hoops, waved the dead chicken. Everything appears to be cool, yet you have no ability to get online.
Exactly.
Okay. So you got these devices. Was the router new as well, or just this?
No, I bought them both. The adapter was $100 and The router was $200. I bought them in tandem at one of the big chain stores here, and it's a top brand, Linksys.
Okay.
One of the most reliable brands.
Sure. So let me ask a couple of questions to kind of get us a little bit more background info. The do you have more than this, just this one computer that's trying to hook up wirelessly, or is that the only computer in the house?
Yes, I have a laptop, and then I have a desktop, a remote desktop, and that's what I'm trying to hook up. I've got, and then I've got a another desktop that's already hardwired in.
Okay, so let me make sure we've got things plugged in properly. The
okay.
The desktop computer that's hardwired, let's start there. That the cable coming out of the back of it, the network cable, should go from it to this new fangled router thing.
Yes.
And then the router, out of the back of it, there are going to be LAN ports. LAN is in local area network, and WAN is in wide area network. And the one WAN port, wide area network port, should plug into your cable modem or your DSL modem or whatever the device is that's going to give you internet access.
Ready?
Okay, and then that in turn plugs into either the coax cable or the phone jack, whatever it is that you you have for your internet service.
Yes.
So we want to make sure those things are intact. Now, when we do all those things, is your desktop machine, is it functioning and able to surf and browse and do all the things it needs to do on the internet? Okay. So we know
my laptop as well.
Okay, so we know that your router, everything is to use a really technical term, it's cool. Right, everything's set up properly. We got everything plugged in. So the only problem now is this other desktop that has this external device hooked up to it that we're not able to get online with. The are you familiar with some real basic tests that you can do called a ping test?
I've heard of it. I've heard it referred to, but I'm not familiar with what that process is.
Okay, so one of the first things that if I was sitting in front of this that I would do is I would go to this machine. Well, first I would go and figure out what the IP address is, and it gets a little technical, but the IP address of the router is. By default, Linksys makes those things, they default those things to the address of 192.168.0.1. What that means is not important, but knowing it is. So with that knowledge in mind, I would go and sit in front of this desktop that's having problems connecting. And I would open up a command prompt, and you can do that by clicking on Start, and then Run, and then typing in the letters C as in Charlie, M as in Monkey, D as in David. And you press Enter, and you'll be up at a command prompt. The next thing we're going to do is type the word ping.
Ping.
Like the golf clubs, right?
Is it case sensitive?
It is not case sensitive.
Already.
And then we're going to put a space, and then the IP address that we got from before. So assuming you've left it at its defaults and it's a Linksys, it's ping space 192.168.0.1. And then we can hit the enter key. Now, one of two things is going to occur when we hit that enter key. You're either going to get back a session timeout kind of thing, and you'll get probably four of them repeated, meaning I can't connect, I can't see the router. And it's the most basic form of networking there is. We can't even see the router on the network. Forget trying to connect to the internet, forget all the other things. We can't see that router, or you're going to get responses from this thing that'll give you some kind of reply and give you a number of milliseconds and some other technical data. We don't really care much about the technical data. All we really care is, can I see my router, my base station, my home, or not? And if the answer is, yes, I can, well, now we're going to move down the troubleshooting path of figuring out, well, okay, that's working. Now can we get to the outside world? And there's some other tests to do that. But if we can't even get that far, then we got to figure out why we're not able to even see that router.
Okay. So, assuming we've gone that far, what's the final process to connect to the internet?
Well, so if we've gone that far and we're able to see the router, then the next thing is going to be, well, is this a problem with we can see the internet, sort of, but there's a problem with what we call name resolution. So the next thing we would do is we would ping a known address out on the internet, and it's rather than when you go to a web page, you don't type in a big series of numbers. Instead, you type in something like datadoctors.com. But datadoctors.com is just a friendly name for a series of numbers that's an IP address, right? And in our case, it would be like a 69.28.134.something. I don't remember the last set. It's kind of like with phone numbers. We all have phone numbers, and companies generally will spend some money to buy themselves a good phone number, like KTAR, bought 277-KTAR, which really KTAR is just a friendly name for 5827, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so this name resolution thing happens with computers, and so if there's a problem with name resolution for some reason, and we can figure out what that problem is, but first we need to establish, is there a problem? The symptom is that we'll be able to ping this remote address, and I'm getting really kind of technical really quickly here. We'll be able to ping the address, knowing the actual address, the number part of it, and that'll work fine, but we won't be able to ping the name, which means that, just that name resolution, the thing that converts the name to the numbers, is damaged or not working or not set up properly. And so then that's the area we address. So we have to kind of determine, is this a network connectivity problem first? That's the first test that we talked about, that basic ping test. Once we know that we've got network connectivity, now do we have name resolution? That's the next thing we just talked about. And then the final piece of that is, okay, we've got both those things intact. Now we should be able to go out and do things on the internet. And if we still can't, then we got to troubleshoot why those issues are there. So it gets a lot more involved to kind of get to the, well, if this doesn't work, how do I fix that problem? Because there can be a number of reasons why that first test doesn't work, or the second test doesn't, or the third, whichever the case may be.
Does having it set for, you know, I've got it set at secured, whatever it is. Do you have the security passwords?
Right.
And whatnot. Does that affect the connectivity?
So what it does is it makes things more complicated. It's definitely something we recommend, but for troubleshooting purposes, something you might try is resetting everything back to the standard defaults and see if you can get a connection and get online that way. If you can, then you know that at least you have good hardware, everything's working properly. Now let's go back and turn security on both ends. And if we have a problem again, then we know that there's some problem with the way the security is configured, and we have to troubleshoot that. But that's definitely one of the things I'd recommend, is that if you're having this kind of issue, and another thing you can try, if you're comfortable with it, is reset that router back to its factory defaults and kind of take out all the extra configuration for security stuff that you put in on the desktop machine and see if we're talking. And if so, then let's try to reapply that security and make sure that we've got the same thing. Now, there are a couple different kinds of security wireless has these days, right? There's WEP, which is kind of the older standard. WEP stood for Wired Equivalent Privacy. And then there's WPA, which is a newer, kind of more secure way to go. And if you interchange the two...
That's what I have.
Right, but if you interchange the two, if one end was set up with one and the other end set up with another, then you'll have some problems.
I think that's my problem.
So you can kind of go back and undo those things first and see if you can't get working. And if so, then go ahead and reapply that. Definitely when you're done, you want to make sure that you have some security turned on.
Very good.
But it doesn't
worse
hurt.
Worse.
It doesn't hurt.
You guys.
Yeah, exactly. All right, sir. Well, hey, good luck with that. Thanks for the call. And I'm sure you're going to get to the bottom of that fairly quickly. Actually, Linksys, by the way, has decent tech support. You can give them a call if you run into additional problems that you're going to set on hold a little while, but their tech support's generally pretty decent.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck. Right?
Right.
You don't even. You're so stuck on your Xbox 360.
I'm telling you, I can't.
What kind of commitment to professionalism and to, I don't know what else, but what is this?
This is important.
Xbox 360 is the most important thing in your life?
Combining everything in the home to work together is the most important. You were just talking about
that. Is the Xbox 360 going to be your new girlfriend?
Yeah, probably. It's not going to talk back.
Speaking of not talking back, guess who? It's Steve Ludwig in the KTR Traffic Center. He's here to talk back. Well, actually to help you talk back to traffic and fight the scourge. Steve, tell him.